Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your Calls Media Roundtable. Later in the show, we'll discuss new reporting about why President Biden continued to send weapons to Israel, despite intelligence reports warning that such support could amount to U.S. complicity in war crimes under international law. But first, we are discussing Born Poor, a powerful new frontline documentary filmed over the course of 14 years, showing the realities of growing up poor in the United States. Born Poor follows Kaylee, Johnny, and Brittany across three chapters of their lives as they grow from kids to teens to adults, trying to pursue their dreams while dealing with an economy where they face more obstacles than opportunities. They also try to overcome the grinding poverty that shapes their childhoods. According to the Census Bureau, more than 9 million children live in poverty in the U.S. Many face housing instability, food insecurity, which basically means that they don't have enough food on the table, disruptions to their education, and adverse mental health outcomes. Here is the trailer for the documentary Born Poor.
When we can't afford to pay our bills, like our house bills and stuff, you never know what'll happen in your life.
We first met them 14 years ago in Illinois and Iowa. Johnny, Kaylee, Brittany, and their families. The experience of growing up poor as seen through their eyes.
We lost our whole house and everything.
Life is going to be hard because there's hardly going to be any jobs left when rich people will be poor. Like you, you might get poor in the last few months. You never know.
From childhood.
If I don't have the opportunity to show somebody to play football, football won't exist.
Then as teenagers.
No matter what I go through, I'll still want to try and try and try to be better.
I know people have it worse than me, and I wish no one had that.
Everybody knows the American dream, oh, go to college and go live your life. That's all I want to do.
And now, young adults.
The last thing that I want is for my kids to worry about what we're going to have for dinner or worry about where we're going to stay.
Being born poor can start off rough. It can be a difficult process because you limited opportunities. But them opportunities will come.
Oh, nice job, man.
What can I do today to make myself better for tomorrow?
Life has lessons. People make mistakes. You know, life goes on no matter what happens.
Changing the cycle that you were born into is very hard. So I'm still learning to this day. It's a long, lengthy process.
That is the trailer for the powerful new Frontline documentary, Born Poor. You can stream Born Poor on Frontline's website, Frontline's YouTube channel, or the PBS app. And we are so glad to be joined by Jezza Newman, an award-winning director and co-producer of Born Poor. Hi, Jezza. Thanks to you and your team for making this very important, powerful, and really devastating documentary. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Can you tell us a bit more about your work and why you've chosen to focus on children? Because you've been doing this for quite a while. You have made many documentaries about children in the United States. You also have a documentary about children in Gaza.
Yeah, absolutely. I've focused on children over the years because there's a lot of preconceived ideas about those that are living in less fortunate circumstances. So if you take America and poverty, you know, there's a lot of people that say people that are poor are lazy, people that are poor are stupid, people, there's a lot of sort of preconceived ideas, there's a lot of stereotypes as well. And so through the children, you get a sort of reality of voice, and you can't blame a child for a situation they're in. So you sort of start to disarm anyone that might have these preconceptions. And so if you could blame a parent potentially for the situation they're in, but to unpick and unravel why they might be in that situation, you need to have a starting point where the viewer will actually engage. And with kids, they're obviously innocent within the world they're in. So therefore people will listen. And we always say, if you capture the heart, the head will follow.
The Annie E. Casey Foundation just came out with a new report last month, and they found that child poverty in the United States has surged, nearly tripling from 5% in 2021 to 13% in 2024. And it is so important to remember what happened during COVID, when families actually received so much more support from the government, and that cut child poverty in half. And then those extra benefits were just taken away. Given that this is a crisis in this country, Jezza, given the work that you do, why do you think we don't spend more time in the media talking about poverty? Why is it so rare in the media to hear from the children that you interviewed in your documentary?
I think it's a difficult subject. You know, it's a hard subject to tackle, to talk about it. I guess often with issues like this, it's easier to turn a blind eye and move on. And it always surprises me whenever I make a film how many people will write on Twitter or Instagram or on the YouTube site. They'll write about, oh my gosh, I didn't realize it was this bad. And I think it's very easy for people and to live in a bubble, you know. And I consider myself incredibly fortunate that I have an opportunity to make these films and have an understanding myself. You know, if I didn't, maybe I'd be the same, you know. So I'm not saying look at me, I understand this and others don't. You know, I think that if it's not there in your daily lives, it's easy to ignore. And often people who are struggling with poverty are living in more marginalized areas of cities or towns, and might not be places where the viewership might visit. So I think it's very easy to sort of demonize the poor and demonize those who are less fortunate and blame. And people like to say, well, you know, this is America. Everyone can fulfill the great American dream, you know, just work hard. But I think there's a moment in the film where I think Brittany really articulates it well, where she says, you know, I desperately didn't want to follow in my parents' footsteps, and suddenly I have found I have. And she says, you know, I just don't understand it, but I guess I just don't have the skill set that's needed to get out. And I think that's the issue. I think it's very easy to take for granted what we would regard as just normal things, you know, that you know how to do. And you realize that everybody has so many mentors around them. You know, if you've got parents around and you've got grandparents and, you know, everyone's living a relatively comfortable life, there's so many things you're learning in life that are life skills that you don't get if you're every day you're struggling. I mean, for these families, it's like every day is like living after a natural disaster. You know, you're constantly working out, where do I get electric? Where do I get food? Where do I, you know, how do I get my kids to school? Oh my gosh, I've lost my job and there's no local buses. So every day you're just trying to survive. So you don't have time to necessarily pick up the skill sets that are required to work out, well, if I did save a little bit of money, maybe that will grow and it would give me more money. You know, you just, there's no one around you telling you these things. So it's very hard. As Brittany says, she just doesn't have those skills. She's incredibly intelligent and incredibly articulate. So it's absolutely possible, but it's just, how do you get that mentorship?
Right. And as you really highlight in the film, it is so hard to break the cycle of poverty. If your car breaks down, you might not have the money. One of the moms talked about how even bringing a plumber to the house is so expensive. How did you find these three kids? How did you get them to trust you? It was just amazing to hear them tell their own stories. And I mean, we shouldn't be surprised. These are smart kids. They're vivacious kids. They're funny. They have dreams. I mean, it's weird to have to say that these are intelligent kids. It's just that we just don't hear much from them in this country. So how did you first find them and then get their families to invite you and your crew into their lives?
So it was a long journey. We went to a lot of food banks. We went to a lot of organizations that were supporting families in need. And we sort of gained the trust of the organizations, and then from there started to meet families. And you know, we had to also find families who are prepared to do this just for the greater good. You know, we never pay anybody to be in a documentary. You know, it's about wanting to become part of something that can make change or highlight the world they're in. So it's finding those families too that are open to that, and then finding the kids in the families who are able and happy to talk about their world. But so you do meet a lot of families on the way, and for some it's not quite right, some it is, and we were just very lucky that there was somebody who sort of took it upon themselves to really help us get access to schools. And we met Brittany in her school. We met Kaylee through a food bank, and we met Johnny through the Salvation Army. And so it was just taking that time to gain the trust. And then with the kids and the families, we spend a lot of time with them, and some of that time isn't filming. It's just hanging with them and listening to them and understanding their worlds, and not always turning over. You know, sometimes it has to be a bit of a give and take as well, which is, and then I just stayed in touch with them over Facebook over the years. Luckily, I'm from that Facebook generation, and so are the parents. So via that, we stayed in touch. So when we did the update in 2017, they were up for it. And then again last year, when the idea came to go back to them once more, they were open to it. So it takes a lot of time. It takes, you know, but they sort of become part of my life in a way. So, you know, you want to hear about them and hear how they're getting on. But you've always got to maintain that balance between the fact that I am still the filmmaker, and therefore we are still on this journey of making this project.
Today we're speaking with Jezza Newman, an award-winning director and co-producer of the new Frontline documentary, Born Poor. It was filmed over 14 years. It shows the realities of growing up poor in the United States. Jezza, we want to play clips from all three of the children in the film, Kaylee, Johnny, and Brittany. So let's start with 9-year-old Brittany. Can you tell us just a bit about her background, about her situation?
Yeah, absolutely. Brittany, her dad lost his job, and as a result, they ended up having to leave where they were living and move into this small house that was pretty run down. And she shared a bedroom with her brother. Dad, you know, was a hardworking man who had done various different jobs. He'd been working for a window company. When we meet them, he's out there trying to get a job again and is really struggling, and he's trying all sorts of places to find one. They're very rural, so there's no bus network around where they live, so they're totally reliant on their vehicle to get about.
Well, let's hear a clip. This is 9-year-old Brittany in the documentary Born Poor.
One day I tried getting in the shower, and it was cold. I put the hot on all the way and no cold, and it was freezing. It felt like shoving your face in a bunch of snow. It was freezing. The hot water shut off because we didn't pay the bill in time. It was overdue.
Sucks.
So what's the next bill due?
Electricity. It'll be $318. We just need to put Roger's ass to work.
Yeah.
When you see the flat screen TV and the computers and our PS3 and stuff, that's just things we've acquired over the years before all this happened. Like when we were not this poor.
Sink's broke. I don't know how or why, but it broke. And the cheapest plumber is like $65 an hour. I can't even afford $20.
Well, we lived in a farmhouse. My dad lost his job from Picture Perfect. He got laid off and we got kicked out of there. We moved here. It's not very big. We didn't have enough room, so we had to put it all in storage, and we lost it all because we couldn't pay it.
How storage works is you put all your stuff in there when you move, but you have to pay the bill or else it gets thrown out in the street because I have a spare key. I don't think it's right because people shouldn't throw other people's stuff in the street because that's just plain up rude. I got a
big makeup thing, and I lost it in storage. I lost my favorite teddy bear. I lost my DS. It was great. It was awesome. I'm bummed out because, like, that was my favorite thing in the world, besides my family.
That is 9-year-old Brittany in the new Frontline documentary, Born Poor. You know, it struck me about so many things, Jezza, but hearing Brittany's brother talk about the computer screen, the games, and he said, we got those before this all happened. And you often hear people say, well, how can they afford a phone or a new TV if they're poor? You know, they don't need to be on food stamps. Look, they've got a phone. It just kind of struck me when he made a point to say we had these things before all of this happened to us.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you'll find that, you know, many people go through this ebb and flow where they're one paycheck away from things getting slightly better because they're getting regular work, to things, you know, tipping over the other way as the 0 hours contract bites and they don't have the work. And in that period, obviously, if you have a family and you want your kids to have the things that everybody else has, so if you get a moment where things are looking good, you will buy the TV or buy them a toy or whatever, because you want, that's how society sees you as a good parent. You know, the last thing you want is for your children to be going to school in shoes with holes in and clothes that don't fit. So you'll spend your money. Now, anyone with money will go, oh, why aren't you saving it? You should be saving that money and just taking, you know, it's fine to have holes in your shoes. Well, it's fine if that's not how you live your life daily. So I think that's the reality. And sometimes, you know, life forces you to have phones and things, because if you look at most of any support networks, they rely on the internet, and the cheapest way to get to the internet is on a phone. You know, they're not all sitting around with MacBook Pros. You know, if they had those, then maybe you might want to question it. But I think that too often we look at what's immediately in front of us and we judge. And I think it's something that also that Brittany said to me at one point, and it's not in the film, but she said, you know, I do understand that maybe at times I could better spend the money when I do get it. But the problem is, you feel so bad as a parent that your kids constantly have nothing. When you do get a little bit of money, you want to treat them, you want to spoil them. And we're only talking about her, you know, going to Five Below and buying some toys from there. We're not, you know, we're not heading off to Macy's or something, you know. So But it's that idea that that's why often you will find that, you know, families who might be struggling and might not live in the greatest place might have a larger TV. And there's another thing. I always find it funny that people judge by televisions and pets, but yet TVs are now so cheap. And I also met someone who basically went to an area that was really wealthy and went and found Skips, and then all these rich people who are dumping their stuff out on their refurb, she was just picking up their couches and their chairs. And so she had some lovely furniture, but it was all taken out of a Skip, you know. And so I think that you mustn't underestimate how savvy people are, when, even though they might not have any money.
Jezza Newman is an award-winning director and co-producer of the new powerful Frontline documentary called Born Poor. It follows Kaylee, Johnny, and Brittany across 3 chapters of their lives as they grow from kids to teens to adults, trying to pursue their dreams and trying to overcome the grinding poverty that shaped their childhoods. We're going to hear another clip. Kaylee, 10 years old. Tell us more about Kaylee and her family.
Yeah, so Kaylee lived with her brother, Tyler, and her mum. Her mum, again, has worked at the time we met her. Again, the hours were being cut. She was struggling to pay her bills. They had 2 pet dogs, and one of which was Kaylee's beloved pet, and it was her friend. You know, again, you know, when you're isolated, you have very few friends because you can't afford to go out to the mall and hang with your mates or go and do things. So her pet was like her best buddy. So of course her mum would try and keep the pet as long as she could. So they're another family that relied on food support to keep them going whilst mum was struggling to try and get more hours.
Let's hear a clip. And just to let everyone know, we've been doing so many shows about what happened with SNAP and the government shutdown, how 42 million people in this country rely on SNAP. And every time a judge told the Trump administration to release funding for it, they fought back. They took it all the way to the Supreme Court. So over the last 6 weeks, millions of people were left in limbo. Some were able to get their SNAP based on city funding, but most did not. And a lot of people have told local media outlets that, especially moms and dads, that they did not eat, just trying to make sure that their children eat. And so here is Kaylee talking about what it is like to not have enough food on the table, and she's 10 years old.
We don't get the 3 meals a day, like breakfast, lunch, and then dinner. When I feel just like hungry, I feel like I'm so like sad and all droopy, and then I'll feel like weak, and then some in the mornings I'll be like so starving, but then I'll like be like, I need some food. But then like I'll get like, but then I don't think of food, and then I'll just think of something else, and then I'll not be hungry anymore.
Jezza, that one was so hard to hear, and to think that so many children and adults and people with disabilities and veterans are going through something similar on a daily basis in this country. Can I ask, where are you from?
I'm from England. I'm currently in London right now.
So I understand that you all have problems in the UK. I've seen a lot of videos about what you're all dealing with healthcare and poverty. In the year 2025, Jezza, does any of this surprise you that we are still dealing with an epidemic of hunger and poverty in a country with so much wealth?
No, I think it's how that wealth is just distributed, which is the same within the UK. You know, it's unfortunately the gap between those that have and those that don't have, it grows ever wider. And I think, you know, particularly with the way, you know, world affairs are going at the moment, with things getting more expensive and post-COVID, that's been the case internationally with the lack of goods being transported around. You know, I think everyone's feeling the bite a bit, and obviously, therefore, the first thing people will want to do is stop giving away their excess, and because they won't want to affect their lives. So this is what I think is happening, is people are generally getting less generous, and it's not because they're less generous people. It's just that they're worrying more about how long they can sustain their lives. And you know, the reality is that you can understand that as you build your life up, it is still quite insecure, because there is a tendency to want to have a slightly better place. You know, just as the kids here want to, you know, as they become parents, want to treat their children, because that's part of what's built in within the framework of society. You too will want to make sure that you can keep your kid at college, or you can move up to the 3-bed house after the 2-bed house. So if your generosity has to take a slight hit, that's what you'll do. And I think that unfortunately, that's what's happening on that level. But then on the other level, I don't think any society yet has sort of mastered how to break this cycle. And time again, I think those that are successful of breaking the cycle of poverty are those that had mentors. I think if we could come up with some international mentoring plan where those that understand the world can help those that don't, then we might be able to do something. But that might be a bit airy-fairy.
All three of the kids talked about the importance of education, especially Johnny. He was always talking about how he wanted to make sure and graduate from high school and graduate from college to try to have a better life. Can you tell us a bit about Johnny? And then we'll play a clip of him when he was 19 talking about why he decided to leave his parents to move in with his grandma in Chicago.
Yeah, Johnny, if he was a superhero, he'd be named Mr. Optimism. He's so optimistic and believes in wanting to play football. So he has this dream to play football. He recognizes he's not alone in that, and he realizes that it's not going to be easy, but that's the dream that keeps him motivated to try and move forward with life. So when we met him, he was in a Salvation Army shelter, and his dad was, luckily at that point, unfortunately his dad had lost his business, and so that's why they became homeless, because the economy crashed, and he had a business that was fixing homes, and no one wanted to fix that home anymore. A bit like what I've just mentioned now, you know, people are buttoning down the hatches. And so when we met him, his dad, in fact, had got a local job, but they had to drive hours to get him to work before they drove back to take him to school. So the challenges facing Johnny and his siblings was huge. And so that's where we first met him, when he was in the Quad Cities.
Here is 19-year-old Johnny talking about why he decided to leave his parents to move in with his grandmother on the south side of Chicago.
My parents, they couldn't sit stable and moving around a lot of places. And I knew it was going to be a problem for me academically as far as my life situation. I guess I started hanging out with the wrong people. I ended up going to jail.
We were all making stupid decisions on a consistent basis every single day. They decided that day that they wanted to shoplift. We ended up getting arrested for it. But I didn't run because I didn't want to get shot. It was a minor misdemeanor. I got locked up for a day.
When I went to jail that day, it was like, you really falling off. You let yourself fall off. You went from all this good stuff happening to you. You gonna be, you know what I'm saying, a good football player. Scouts was coming to see me at practices and asking about me and wanting me to play on their team, to now you smoking weed and you got locked up and all that. It was like a reality check to myself. Like, you really falling off. You need to get back on track. And this was my wake-up call, I guess. I came up here to start over.
The route I was taking down south wasn't going good. I was going to be a dropout or something like that. And I had to do it. I had to graduate. Something my parents didn't do. I had to make that opportunity and graduate from college.
That is a clip from the new documentary, Born Poor. Final thoughts from you, Jezza, about after spending so many years with these kids, what did you learn about just the difficulty of making lives better and breaking the cycle of poverty, and what society and governments really need to do to tackle this epidemic?
I mean, I learned a lot from the kids and seeing the barriers they came across. One thing I learned that everyone can take away from this is that I realized that when I interviewed these kids, I would listen to them for hours on end, and I wasn't there to judge them or make decisions for them. I was just listening to them. And I realized that too often in life, we don't actually listen to our kids. And I actually came home after filming Brittany one time, and I interviewed my daughter. And it was fascinating. I just interviewed her for 2 hours and heard all about her thoughts on global warming and the death of the polar bears and her worries about it, she was the same age as Brittany. And so I sort of took that into my life to make sure that I always stopped and had a moment. And when I was on the phone and they wanted this or that done, I would take that time and do it. And that was something I took from them. But then on this journey of their journey, I think it's really fascinating. And as you say, I've made a lot of films on this subject, but I've never heard anyone articulate the poverty cycle and the way these kids do and how they kind of play off each other, where Brittany talks about not having the skill sets. Then she talks about falling into a hole and climbing out of it, grabbing at tree roots, and gives a really... And when you see that in the film, if you have time to go and watch it, you'll see how she actually uses the actions of climbing out, so you can see how deep this is rooted in her. Excuse the pun, sorry. And then with Johnny, you know, he has this dream to play the football and he won't give it up. And then Kaylee explains how when you live such a horrible life, the dreams are the things that makes it bearable. You know, those dreams are there. And I think the challenge is, how do you therefore make sure these dreams can actually be a reality, not just a dream? And I come back to what I mentioned before, and I think you need to find a way that you could create a mentorship, a way that if Johnny had someone that helped him give the skill sets, then how did he get to the next level? How does he find that agent to help him with the football? And with Brittany, you know, it's like, how does she get through school and can someone help her get to the next level, etc.? So I think it's those things. I mean, there's a moment in the film that I deliberately chose where she's in the food bank and they've got salmon and she goes, wow, salmon. And I can hear every single middle-class person out there going, yeah, it's salmon, yeah, fine. And then she's cooking it at home and she goes, and you see her chopping it up. And I even witnessed somebody who saw this who goes, oh, why is she cutting it like that? And she reveals, well, I've never cooked salmon before. And to me, it's just like, this is my point. She has never bought salmon. She's never, you know, she's never cooked salmon. Salmon is a privilege, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was just one of those moments where I hope that people would realize how privileged we are, that we just think salmon is a normal thing. It might be not something you have every day because it could be particularly expensive, but it is something you will have had and you would have probably cooked if you cook. And so it's that. It's how do you get those things, those elements of life that are skill sets that will help you break out of the cycle? How do we get these kids to be able to have them or access to them?
Jezza Newman is an award-winning director and co-producer of the new Frontline documentary, Born Poor, which shows the realities of growing up poor in the United States. You can watch it on Frontline's website, Frontline's YouTube channel, or the PBS app. Jezza, huge thanks to you and your team for making this important documentary. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, and thank you to your listeners as well.
Thank you. Coming up after a break, we will talk about new reporting about why President Biden continued to arm Israel after his administration had discussions about war crimes. This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. We'll be back after this.